Spotlighters Theater in Baltimore is presenting Edward II, adapted by Jonas David Gray, through June 22nd. With me in the studio are actor and playwright Jonas David Gray and Brad Norris, who is directing this production. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hi.
Hi there.
Jonas, you've had this project in mind for many years, decades, actually. What was it about this play that spoke to you and made you want to do your own adaptation of the Christopher Marlowe script?
My first encounter with Edward II, the historical figure, and Marlowe's character was Derek Jarman's movie back in the mid-90s. And it struck me as being a very timely and fascinating look at what then was a contemporary social issue. Going back and looking at Marlowe's script after that shocked me even more. Finding a script that was written in the late 16th century that seemed to me to focus on the love between two men and how that was viewed in a negative light, it was fascinating. And so that got me started with Edward II. I started looking up everything I could on the actual historical figure. I read Marlowe's script repeatedly. I found a couple of productions to see. And what I discovered with Marlowe's text and with the treatment of it in modern times is that it didn't quite tell the story that I wanted to tell. And so I took it upon myself, rather arrogantly, I imagine, to rewrite Marlowe in a way to suit my needs. The focus of that for me has always been this intense love between two people and how it fares in the face of almost universal opposition.
So what didn't work about the Marlowe for you? What did you change?
I changed a lot about the Marlowe. The first thing that didn't work about the Marlowe for me was its length. It's an extremely long play. You know, 16th century audiences may have been happy with a 4-hour production. 21st century audiences are not, typically. At least I'm not. So I trimmed it down dramatically. Also, several of the characters in Marlowe's text are less interesting than I wanted them to be. The character of Isabella, for example, is not particularly likable. She's a bit sycophantic. She's a bit whiny, and she doesn't seem to have any strength. So I immediately gave her another character's lines in some instances to beef her up a little bit, to give her a little more power, and to make her a little more interesting to play and watch. There was also a storyline that I cut involving the marriage of Gaveston to Edward's niece, which did not suit my purposes.
Interesting. And you cut some smaller characters, too, some smaller roles, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes.
There are two Mortimers. There are two Spencers. I didn't see the need for them, so I combined them.
There is a group of musicians called the Society in this production. How did that idea come about?
I always knew that I wanted this to be as much of, or to have as much of an impact on the audience as possible. And I thought the best way to do that would be to drag the audience into the production as much as I could. So creating the Society to sort of be the parenthetical world in which our production takes place was an idea that I had that in part I got from some shows I'd seen in New York. Creating that world, allowing the audience to walk into a world in which they were immediately engaged, it just seemed like a really good idea. I had no idea how to execute it, but it seemed like a really good idea. And pretty much right off the bat when Brad and I started talking about this, I had in mind a couple of people that I wanted to just take it on. It's weird talking about that because you are one of them.
Yes, full disclosure, I am in fact one of the Society musicians. I'm singing in this production and it was really something putting this together. Let's just say it was a wild ride, but I'm having a great time.
And we owe the Society almost exclusively to you. So much about this production I feel like was my idea and then I gave it to somebody else and they took it and they changed it and they made it better and they created this thing that I am just thrilled with. The Society is one of my favorite parts of the entire production.
Oh, thank you.
Being able to sit out there and watch and listen and be engaged and entertained by all of you is amazing. And I couldn't be happier with the way that turned out.
Great. Thank you again.
So thank you.
Brad, why is this production set in 1936, hundreds of years after the original story took place?
The original, Edward the First, Edward the Longshanks, and his son, Edward II. Edward I lived in 1200s, and his son reigned through the 1300s. And then his son, Edward III, even further. But so that's where Marlowe's original text sort of plops us. One of the things that Jonas really encountered when he read the play and experienced the play decades ago was how relevant Marlowe's text from the 1600s was to a modern audience. And so one of the things that we talked about was how to bring it forth from not only the 1300s where it's set, but the 1600s where it was written into 2014 for a modern audience, and to draw parallels that people would understand. Because a lot of the conflicts that are referenced in Marlowe's text in terms of nation states and countries and things like that are hundreds and hundreds of years old. And conveniently, countries and monarchies are cyclical in their existence and tend to repeat the mistakes of the past. And certainly prejudice does the same thing. So we didn't have to look very far back. So in the year 1936 in England, you get the Year of Three Kings, where George passes away, George VI passes away, and his son Edward VIII takes the throne. Edward VIII was in love with Wallis Simpson, who had been divorced previously and was in the process of getting her second divorce and was in love with the king, and the king was in love with her and they wanted to be married. However, the king in England is the head of the church, and the church frowned upon divorced women remarrying, and certainly frowned upon divorced women remarrying monarchs. So the long and short of it was that constitutionally and parliamentarily, the government said, no, you can't marry this woman and be king. And so he abdicated the throne, and his brother was crowned king. And all of that took place within the span of one calendar year. It was December when the abdication was final, and his brother took over as king. And amidst all of that, what you get are the seeds of World War II, the need for a strong monarch, the need for a monarch that people trust and believe in, underscores everything that happened to Edward in 1936. And a lot of that exists in Marlowe's text with reference to Edward II. So without giving too much away, Edward has a lover, Pierce Gaveston. And when people are trying to get Gaveston banished or beheaded or whatever it is they happen to be doing at that moment, there is always a sense of this is for the country's good, this is for the realm's good, this is because there is growing conflict. And so some of the small edits that Jonas and I talked about making to the text were small changes in making references to, rather than Scotland, we're talking about Germany. We're referencing the Spanish Civil War, which was going on in 1936. We're referencing the rise of socialism in London and the black shirts and the riots that took place. All of these conflicts coming to a head, and all of them being used as references by the other characters for the need to depose the king or the need to banish his lover from the realm. So 1936 offers a great opportunity for us to take a look in a very real way, in a very memorable way, at a conflict that is not so far away from where we are today and is still relevant. And it's amazing how easily Marlowe's text just gets inserted right into that.
There's a practical reason that we did it that's separate from this. That's the reason that it's set in that time. But what that did as a practical function is that it also allowed us to bring women into this cast in a much bigger way.
Yes.
Marlowe has two female characters. I cut one of them. So we're immediately stuck with an all-male cast and one woman, which I don't think either of us ever wanted.
No.
And we've been able to cast women in some roles that have ended up, I can't imagine those characters being played any other way now.
Yeah.
Nor can I.
And it's fantastic.
Yeah, the cast makeup at this point is about 50-50 in terms of men and women. And it creates some phenomenal relationships and some great, great power struggles. It just works so well, like Jonah said. I wouldn't want them any other way. And this might be a wonderful opportunity to say what a wonderful, amazing, stupendous cast we have in this show. We've been blown away. And to find this kind of talent, I was about to say raw talent, but there's nothing raw about these people. They came with years of experience and they came with so much energy and life and choices to make this production. If it was the production that Jonas saw in his head or if it was the production that I saw in my head when we started talking about it, it would be terrible.
Right.
Thank goodness these actors have been able to come in and add every bit of themselves to it, because that has changed it and transformed it and made it into this awesome thing that it is.
I agree.
This is Edward II, adapted from the Christopher Marlowe script by Jonas David Gray, running through June 22nd at Spotlighters Theater, 817 St. Paul Street in Baltimore. Jonas, do you have a phone number for us for more information?
I did. It's 410-752-1225.
And Brad, the website, please?
www.spotlighters.com. jonasdavidgray.org.
I've been speaking today with Jonas David Gray, actor and playwright, and director Brad Norris. We've been talking about Edward II at Spotlighters Theater in Baltimore. I am singing in this production very happily as part of the Society.
And very wonderfully.
Thank you. Thank you. And music begins 1 hour before each performance, by the way. So showtimes Friday and Saturday are 8 p.m., Sunday 2 p.m., but the music will begin 1 hour before curtain time. Jonas David Gray and Brad Norris, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For WBJC, I'm Diana Neal.